Then the gun stops. Hi, Prapapa, how are you?
Hi, how are you? I'm fine, thank you.
You're doing well?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so I see
I'm
now
ready.
Yeah, I can see you now. I see Oscar's also joining in. Hi, Oscar.
Hi. Hi, Oscar.
He's doing his earphones fast so that he can connect to audio. I also just talked to Dr. Angela. Sorry?
Angela is here. How many people, do you know how many people subscribe or register? No?
Yeah, for registration, so far I've checked. We had, let me confirm the latest number. The latest I've seen is actually 16.
16.
17 actually. So one's actually just
17.
Yeah, so the number sometimes towards then can shoot a bit because people are a bit last minute. So you might have a bit more people joining.
I lost you, Mr. Camo.
Maybe know how many people we should expect.
Sorry, I was on the phone with Dr. Angela.
No.
She should be joining us shortly. Hi, Oscar. Can you hear me now?
Yes, Mr. Kamau. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
See, now she's joined.
So you haven't yet opened
I haven't yet broadcasted it. So I wanted us to test the presentations. You can now try share slides. Make sure your polls are there. Just refresh yourself on how to conduct them and all that before we can, because we actually scheduled to start in 7 minutes.
Yes.
So, yeah. So you guys can start. I think, Oscar, were you done doing the presentation? Oh, you're moderating.
I'm moderating.
So the Prof. Afa would like
yes,
to.
Yes, Angela, you are on mute.
Sally, you Afa. One chance. Hi, Oscar.
Hi, Angela. How are you doing?
I'm not ignoring you or Kamau. So it's just that. Wafa looks splendid.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
Certainly, I will be better than 1 hour. So you know what? I will put off my video when we start because the focus should be on Wafa and Oscar.
Yeah, me too. No, yes. Do you think I should also be? No, just Wafa is enough.
No, yeah. No. Please
the, don't lady, the lady of the day.
Yes.
Don't let me alone, please. Please don't go away.
No, we are there.
Don't let me open. Please.
No, but really, Oscar, during the introductions, I think it's good. Let your video be on. Then when she starts presenting, then you can switch off so everybody just focuses on her. And then when it's question time, then you can put back your video.
Okay.
So I think the focus should be you, just you and Wafa.
Okay.
No, I want to see you.
No, Wafa.
It seems like Wafa wants to make sure you are not far.
But I'm there. I will be there for sure. But the focus is you today.
No, I'm looking forward to this presentation, you know?
Yes. So am I.
I hope that...
No, it's going to make a...
So, I'm trying to find a good place where I don't look like I'm in the dark.
Ah.
No, you have to make the window in front of you, not behind
that.
Yeah, that's the light.
Yeah, for the light. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Kamau, do you want us to test the presentation?
Yes, please. Wafa, you could try maybe share slides so you make sure everything is running smoothly. I can see your audio is fine, the video is fine, people are looking fantastic.
Yeah, and as, and but looking at my site, Mr. Kamau, I don't have the poll option. Do you do it intentionally or I don't need to have it right now?
No, let me actually give that to you right now.
Yeah, at the same time, I'm okay. Good, I have it.
Sorry. So now you have it, I believe.
Yes, I have it. I have question number one. I think I have all the questions.
Everything is okay?
Yeah.
So I think even.
And. Anyway, just to make sure I don't miss it, we are going to have all the participants on mute, automatic mute, right?
Yes, they are going to be muted automatically.
And when they want to intervene, how do you allow them to speak?
So at the bottom, you can see participants tab. You can see that?
Yes.
So when you click on that, currently you can see there's KPA, then you see Wafa, Angela, and yourself. Mm-hmm. And then you can see at the top there's panelists, which is us four, and then there's attendees. So when you click on the attendees, right now it's empty because I haven't broadcasted the meeting and we haven't actually allowed people in because they're still doing some housekeeping. But now you'll have the list down there. So you can find a name, whoever it is you want to allow to speak, it will actually give you those options. If you just click on the link, it will give you those options. To ask to unmute, you'll give them to allow to talk, and then you can give them to and ask them to unmute. Ultimately, though, they will have to unmute on their end, even once you allow them to unmute, because of privacy. So they might be maybe in a bit of noise and they don't want to disrupt the meeting. So it allows them that. So even if you unmute them, it just gives them the capability to be able to access their mic and mute it as they please. But as it is right now, they don't even have a mic. So as you do your presentations, they can raise their hands. And again, whoever raises their hands, their name comes to the top of the list with the blue hand right next to their name. So you can clearly see what it is they want and who has raised their hand, and you can allow them to speak.
Good.
Right from that,
I propose we open the meeting because it's like 1:59.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll give people 5 minutes.
Yes.
Maybe Oscar and Wafa, you can just chit chat, and then by 2:05 we start, or rather 1:05. on your end and 12:05 on Wafa's end.
5 minutes later.
Yeah, five minutes later.
Yeah, that's
so I think cool. Kamau, maybe you can open it. Kamau, you'll be online, isn't it?
I am online. Yeah. So what okay. You can do, yeah. So I can broadcast the meeting. Even Oscar, you can see the broadcast at the top. So let me do that. And then I'll be silent. I'll mostly communicate using the chat should you need me.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm around.
Okay. Bonne chance, Wafa.
Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
Ça va, allez, je vous jure.
J'ai envie de parler en français, en fait. Je vais parler en français et ce sera plus facile.
Vers les questions-réponses, peut-être, vous pourrez le faire.
Je vais essayer de parler en anglais.
Ça, mais ça. Je
vais faire plein de fautes de grammaire, mais bon.
Ça va. Et puis, qu'est-ce que tu penses vers le slide de questions, tu juste me fais signe et puis je lance le poll, c'est ça?
Si vous pouvez le faire, ça serait très bien. Que je puisse me concentrer sur la présentation.
Merci.
Wafa, so I'll switch off my video now.
No, okay. Please not.
Yeah. It's okay, Wafa. Don't worry.
I want to see you.
Good.
And your life's gone.
Oh, she's around. Thank you all for joining. We are starting in 4 minutes.
4 minutes? Yeah.
Yes.
There are already some participants.
Yeah.
We have 10 participants.
Yeah, we are starting. I think we are starting.
Should wait for some more.
I think 1 or 5 we are starting, and people will join us on the way.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, dear all. Welcome to this exciting moment of Bafla, our October monthly CME. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. Bienvenue au grand jour de Bafla. Sentez-vous à l'aise et à la maison. As we celebrate its very first birthday, Bafla welcomes you to this CME. I'm Dr. Oscar Muzerwa, and I'm very honored to introduce to you our very esteemed speaker of today, Professor Wafa Hamdi. We've gone so far to the Mediterranean Sea coastline of Africa in our beautiful Tunisia at Kassab Institute, and we find who is a rheumatologist. Professor Wafa Hamdi is the head of Department of Rheumatology at Kassab Institute, which is the center, the public center dedicated to musculoskeletal diseases in Tunisia. She's a coordinator of the section of rheumatology at the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Tunis El Manal. She's also the associate secretary of Tunisian League Against Rheumatism. Professor Wafa Hamdi is a member of Arab Adult Arthritis Awareness Group, and she's an active member of Bafla Co-working Task Force. Professor Wafa Hamdi has several responsibilities, as mentioned previously, and she holds several diploma and certificates in rheumatology all around her areas of interest, which are clinical immunology, musculoskeletal ultrasound, pediatric rheumatology, epidemiology, and spondyloarthritis. She has an extensive list of publications that go beyond 50 national and international publications. Professor Wafa Hamdi is very excited to introduce to her to us the best way to save children's joints. She says, "Our joints matter, but the hip is special." She's going to tell us more about that. As ground rules, we have a chat form for Q&A, so you are free to post your questions. And if you want to intervene, you are free to raise your hand and we will allow you to do so. And we would prefer if you can mute your mics. And at the end of this session, we have a feedback form. Please, we welcome and value much your feedbacks to our CME. We want to improve with the time. Dear participants, join me to welcome our amazing speaker, Professor Wafa Hamdi. Professor Wafa, you're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Oscar, for this very nice introduction. For me, it's a dream come true to be able to communicate with my brothers and sisters from all African countries so we can share experience and thoughts. I think you already guessed that it won't be a presentation about the hip hop lesson, but we will talk about the hip joint, particularly hip arthritis during juvenile idiopathic arthritis, and how to bring hope about the prognosis of this disease. So, I have no disclosure to declare for this presentation. Our objectives are how to assess clinical and radiographic expression of hip arthritis in patients with juvenile idiopathic arthritis and to discuss main differential diagnosis. also to discuss monitoring tool of hip arthritis and the treatment options and what's the expected response. So the hip is commonly involved joint in juvenile idiopathic arthritis that result in pain, loss of mobility, and the limited function. The hip is a pivot joint that connects the axial and appendicular skeleton. It's a central and crucial landmark for growth of the skeleton, of the axial skeleton. The major risk of hip involvement in childhood rheumatism is the impact on the spine with the risk of developing scoliosis, and on the appendicular skeleton with the risk of lower limb length discrepancy. Those two complications have a significant impact on the ability to work and the physical activities, with negative impact on emotional and psychological balance. Thus, hip involvement is a major prognostic element in patients with juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And as you, this recently published paper, the hip arthritis could be also considered as a public health care matter. In fact, the study, this study based on a U.S. national inpatient sample covering more than 15 years and over 4 million patients with total hip arthroplasty and 8 million patients with knee arthroplasty, juvenile idiopathic arthritis is associated with a higher health utilization, and the others conclude that intervention to reduce the risk of higher resources utilization are needed in people with juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Well, we will start with our first case. So we have here a 9-year-old boy. He's presented in our clinic with his mother, who underwent chemotherapy for Hodgkin lymphoma. He's a fourth grade primary school student. He's a hip hop dancer, and he's complaining of buttock and left groin pain with difficulties in walking and occasional limping. These symptoms began 4 weeks ago, progressively, with no fever, no trauma, but he said that he did a lot of exercises with his team recently. The pain was mostly diurnal, it's also nocturnal, and do not prevent him from walking, running, and playing. He's a very active and courageous boy, but this pain has worsened the past few days and was associated with pain in the left knee and ankle. So, which of these symptoms indicate or reflect a hip involvement? Do you think that knee pain, please vote? It's a multiple choice question. You have 13 seconds to submit your answer, please. Do you think that knee pain, limping, buttock pain, or groin pain, or ankle pain could reflect hip involvement?
You have the polls, a few seconds to end the poll, please respond. Great.
Great, thank you, Oscar.
Thank you, as you can see, we have the responses, and majority mentioned limping and groin pain, followed by at the same time, buttock pain and knee pain, or these four symptoms mentioned.
Thank you. I completely agree with you. In fact, the hip involvement caused mainly groin pain, but young children couldn't report that easily. We have to ask them and insist, and ask also parents. They report also referred the thigh or knee pain, refusal to bear weight. They report also limping, and we have to see them walking and lying on one limb to see that. Buttock pain is rare and should be, and in this case, we should think about sacroiliac joint involvement, but in 5 to 10% of cases report only buttock pain for hip arthritis. Nevertheless, ankle pain couldn't reflect hip involvement, and we should think about local cause of ankle pain. So on clinical examination, the child was able to stand on one limb with no pain or collapse. The left hip was painful, and particularly in external rotation, but not limited. All other joints were free from pain during mobilization. And we have a normal range of motion for hips, knees, ankles, and all the joints. The rest of physical examination was normal. So what we should propose for this child, we can reassure their mom and tell her that the kid is fine and he can go home. He had just a growing pain. Or we have to order MRI of the pelvis. Please, Oscar, display the pool if you could. We have also Yes, thank you, Oscar. We could only of the pelvis or the laboratory tests and X-ray or ultrasound examination. Or we have first to complete the clinical examination. So please vote. You have 13 seconds. You have 30 seconds.
Thank you. I think we can end. And as you can see, Wafa, majority won. Complete clinical exam.
Exact. We have first to complete the clinical exam, and we should proceed to a buttock examination, and particularly we have to do the Faber or Patrick test. We will have the child lying supine. We have to place the leg passively brought to flexion, abduction, external rotation with the foot resting on the opposite knee. And we have to press down gently the knee. And also to press also the opposite superior. The pain will be felt on the groin if we have a hip involvement, or in the back, on the sacroiliac joint if we have sacroiliac pathology. So the Patrick test or the Faber test allow us to distinguish between hip arthritis or sacroiliac involvement. We also should proceed to spine examination to see if there is associated spinal involvement or scoliosis, and to see the impact of on the equilibrium of. We should also single leg hopping, long. Zigzag running and sitting with laying on his side, and that could confirm a great trochanter or medius gluteus in his involvement. We can also proceed to a Thomas test, assessment of flexion contracture. The patient is lying supine with a level pelvis. The examiner have to place his hand under the patient's lumbar spine, and we ask the patient to flex one hip as far as possible, and the patient's back should flatten and the extended leg should remain straight. In case of flexion contracture, the patient is unable to extend his lumbar spine, and we can measure here the angle of flexion contracture. We should also proceed to measuring the limb length discrepancy by measuring distance between the anterior superior iliac crest and the medial malleolus. And this is considered as the reference and the best way to measure lower limb length discrepancy. And finally, we should see the child walking with kind and to determine what kind of limping he had. And according to you, which of these type of limping is associated with acute hip arthritis? Is it avoidance limping, balance limping, greeting limping, circumduction limping, or two walking?
You have to the poll. 5 seconds.
Very good. The majority of you think that avoidance limping is associated with acute hip pain. It's correct. In fact, avoidance limping or intelligent gait. In this case, the child have shortened stance phase on the affected side, where the time to downforce is reduced. It could be associated to any cause of hip pain and could be observed with acute hip arthritis. But in this specific, but this is not specific of this condition. Balance limping or Trendelenburg gait is associated to weak hip abduction of the body, and the body lurch into the affected side. It's secondary to a deficit of gluteus medius, and that is not usually associated to hip arthritis, but a muscle deficiency. For greeting limping, it's an anterior flexion of the trunk when the tibia and the supporting limb moves forward as to greet. It's associated to a defect in hip extension and could be observed in chronic arthritis with joint stiffness and structural damage, but not with acute hip pain. Circumduction gait is observed in case of length discrepancy when the longer limb sway around to move forward. This is rarely associated with acute hip pain, but usually observed with the lower limb discrepancy, long discrepancy. And finally, the two walking is associated also to length discrepancy and or with a flexion contracture of the hip, which is observed in chronic hip arthritis with structural damage. So to discuss our case, we have to take into account mainly three parameters: age, the fact that the child is sick or not, and the type of hip pain and symptoms. Are they acute or chronic? Are they inflammatory or mechanic? First of all, we have to rule out serious and life-threatening causes, particularly osteomyelitis and septic arthritis. But the child in our case is not sick, he has no fever, and the pain is well tolerated. Life-threatening diagnoses such as malignancy should be also ruled out by urgent investigation. Mechanical causes should be also discussed accordingly to the age of the child. So for children under the age of 4 years, we have to discuss non-accidental injury, referred pain from limb. In children between 4 and 10 years, we have to discuss Perthes disease. And in children above 10 years, we have to discuss slipped femoral epiphysis or avulsion fracture. But here we have already two red flags. We have inflammatory pain and limping. So we have to discuss juvenile idiopathic arthritis, and the transient synovitis should be a diagnosis of elimination. And we have to roll out all serious diagnoses before to conclude to transient synovitis. So in our patient, we ordered laboratory tests and we got normal inflammatory parameters, ECR and ESR and CRP, and also a normal CBC. And here you have the plain X-ray of the pelvis. So do you see anything abnormal? Do you think this radiography is normal? You can give your opinion via the chat, or you can open your mic if you want.
Yeah. If you raise your hand, I will be able to communicate. Mm-hmm. Post in the chat.
Do you see anything abnormal? Yeah. Yes, you can post on the chat, or maybe someone want to open his mic. So we have first we have to focus on the left hip. So as you see here, there's a large zone of osteoporosis located on subchondral bone of the femoral head that could correspond to a bone cyst or to a lacune or to a subchondral geode. Otherwise, we have a normal space, joint space, so width. The head of the femur is normal, is not slipped, and we have soft also soft tissues are normal. So this lacuna was a little bit intriguing, and before discussing causes like a tumor, inflammatory subchondral porosis, or geodes, we should look very well to the image and consider superposition or a constructed image with the anterior acetabular wall and also the posterior acetabular wall. These two superpositions should manage a zone of bone porosis, physiological bone porosis, superiorly and inferiorly. We should also look at the sacroiliac joints, and here you have an enlargement of the joint space and an irregular subchondral bone, with a sclerosis. And finally, we ordered an MRI of the pelvis that shows sacroiliates on the both sides and an effusion of the left hip with a normal signal on the femoral head bone. So our child is tested positive for HLA-B27 and we conclude to juvenile spondyloarthritis. So it's very important to confirm the diagnosis of inflammatory hip arthritis in early stage of the disease. So we could start very early the treatment, and that could improve the prognosis of the disease. But the most important thing to do at this stage is to roll out other diagnoses. And here we have our second case. It's a young boy with aged of 6 years with acute left pain and fever starting for 5 days. The child was unable to walk without help, and the hip mobilization was very painful. We got here normal biologic parameters. We have no inflammatory parameters, and the leukocyte count was normal. Also, you have here the pelvis, the X-ray, which seems to be normal in my end. And we performed an ultrasound of the hip. So the ultrasound shows hip joint effusion. So do you think that according to the to this data, we should conclude to a transient synovitis? In fact, no, because we have two red flags. We have here, we have here fever, and we have measured hip pain and functional limitation. So we ordered MRI of the pelvis. That shows septic arthritis with abscess, soft tissue abscess, and osteomyelitis of the femoral head. So the diagnosis was septic arthritis associated to osteomyelitis. And because of some difficulties to schedule the MRI, we have a delayed diagnosis and a delayed treatment. And here you have the outcomes 6 years later with severe structural damage of the hip and the lower limb discrepancy of 3 centimeters. Also, we have to roll out serious diagnosis and life-threatening diagnosis such as malignancy, particularly lymphoma, leukemia, and metastasis of neuroblastoma, particularly in younger children. Osteosarcoma is the most common cancer, bone cancer in teens, and usually develops in the area where the bone is growing quickly, such as near the end of the leg or the arm bones. It often causes bone pain that gets worse at night or with activity. Also, we have to discuss Ewing sarcoma, which is a less common type of bone cancer. It's most often found in young teens. The most common places for it to start is the pelvis and particularly the hip, and symptoms can include bone pain and swallowing. We have also here another case of a 15-year-old boy. He complained of inflammatory left hip pain that has progressed for when the patient reports minimal hip trauma, and the pain relieved very well with NSAIDs. So it gets worse in the last 4 months with a partial functioning impotence. The patient got no fever, no weight loss. The hip was very painful on mobilization with a flexion contracture at 15 degrees. Also, a very limited mobilization. The spine is normal. Also, we performed laboratory tests and that showed no inflammation. Pelvis X-ray and hip ultrasound were normal. So in this case, we should better ordering MRI of the pelvis, but because of problems of immediate availability of this examination, we ordered first a CT scan, and that was great because we got our diagnosis, and in this particular diagnosis should be missed easily, could be missed easily by the MRI. So as if you look here, we got a dot, a sclerotic dot. See, I'm looking for my flash. So we got a sclerotic dot surrounded by a layer of demineralization and a second layer of bone sclerosis. That's called the nidus, and we have here our diagnosis, which is osteoid osteoma. And in this case, this case was particular because osteoid osteoma, which is an inflammatory bone tumor, benign bone tumor, is located usually in the femoral neck and not in the acetabulum. And when it's located in the femoral neck, it could be suspected easily by a plain X-ray. We should also discuss other hip benign bone tumors. And according to the location of the tumor, we discuss mainly on the acetabulum, bone cyst, and the eosinophil granuloma, also the same diagnosis for the diaphysis. For the femoral neck, we should discuss first osteoid osteoma. We should discuss also exostosis, and we should also discuss onchondroma. And on the great trochanter, we should discuss chondroblastoma. And finally, with acute hip pain with no sick child, and after rolling out other serious and urgent diagnoses, such as malignancy and infection, and even inflammatory arthritis, particularly juvenile idiopathic arthritis, we should consider the diagnosis of transient synovitis. It's called also coxitis fugax or toxic synovitis. It's the most common cause of hip pain or limp in children under the age of 10 years. It's an aseptic inflammation of hip, presumably of post-viral etiology. The affected children are only mildly ill or have recently sustained a lower grade respiratory tract infection. This condition is self-limited and treated and respond very well to rest and analgesics. imaging is not strictly necessary, but an ultrasound is often requested to confirm the presence of a joint effusion, as you see here on the left side comparatively to the right side. Radiography is only performed when there is other differential diagnosis considered, particularly infection or malignancy, and always consider the possibility of septic arthritis in a sick child. So in a child with a hip pain, the first imaging methods that we should consider is X-ray for evaluation of bone diseases. Ultrasound is complementary to X-ray for better assessing soft tissue and the detection of joint effusion. It's very useful for guiding puncture. We have to order MRI if we have to assess complication. If we have a prolonged complaint with normal X-ray and normal ultrasound, and to assess the extent of disease. The MRI allow a better joint detailing and evaluation of the physis cartilage, subchondral bone, periosteum, synovia, and bone marrow. Computed tomography is only ordered when there is a suspicion of osteoid osteoma and for evaluation of the bone contour. And the bone scintigraphy is only ordered if we have a suspicion of osteomyelitis and the primary site is unknown. Also is ordered for assessment of multifocal diseases and if we suspect stress or failure fracture. So we will move to our second case. We have here a young girl, aged of 12. She complained of right groin pain with limping for 6 months. She got no fever, no trauma. The pain was nocturnal and diurnal. And on physical examination, we have a limitation on the mobility of the right hip. We have a lower limb length discrepancy of 4 centimeters and a progressive spinal deformity with the right dorsal gibosity. The laboratory test shows a mild inflammation. And we have here the X-ray of the pelvis of this young girl that shows pelvis disequilibrium and shows also a space joint narrowing. Here we completed with an MRI of the pelvis that shows hip arthritis, right hip arthritis, and also shows sacroiliitis on both sides. So we conclude to the diagnosis of juvenile spondyloarthritis complicated with the coxitis, lower limb discrepancy, and scoliosis. Our patient is treated with naproxen, methotrexate, and sulfasalazine, and she got 2 intra-articular injections of exacetonide of triamcinolone at diagnosis and 2 years later. Here we have the parameters of disease activity, and here we have the best dye, which is the best ankylosing spondylitis disease activity index. It's a two-questionnaire of 6 questions that evaluate the disease activity, and we have a score varying between 0 and 10, with 10 a very high disease activity. And here, as you see, the disease activity was very well controlled by this treatment. We also performed the ASDAS, which is the ankylosing spondylitis disease activity score, which includes CRP. It's more objective than and the best day, and here we get also a low disease activity. Nevertheless, when performing the parameters that assess the functional impairment, we got a very high score of BASFI. BASFI is a Bath ankylosing spondylitis functional index. It varies also between 0 and 10, and 10 is a very high functional impairment. And here, for score superior to 4, we got an impairment, a very severe impairment functional impairment. We also perform the Loken score, which is a score specific of hip arthritis, and we got here a score confirming a hip impairment, a functional impairment on the right side, a severe hip impairment of on the hip on the right side. 2 years later, we got here the radiography that shows the correction of the pelvis disequilibrium, but we have here a narrowing of the joint width space. And we got here the EOS that evaluate the equilibrium of the skeleton. And as you see here, the child still have the flexion contracture of the right hip. The scoliosis go better with the little correction of the scoliosis, but we have here a very important lordosis of the lumbar spine. And as you see, with this treatment, the disease activity was well controlled by this treatment, but we have a functional impairment that didn't improve with this treatment. And here arises the problem of how to evaluate, how to assess the hip arthritis in juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Are there any specific tools for monitoring hip arthritis? So please, Oscar, display the poll. So according
yes,
to you...
Can you see the poll?
Yeah, thank you. According to you, do you think that among these parameters, there is a specific parameters for monitoring hip arthritis? Loken index, pelvis x-ray, JADAS, the JAMAR, the measuring maximum distance walking, or ultrasound examination? You can have more than one good response.
Yeah, a few seconds remaining.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's enough, Diwafa. What do you think?
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Good.
Yeah.
There you have the results.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Majority of you think that Loken index is a specific tool. Yes, as mentioned before. Pelvis X-ray, yes, it assesses structural damage. The JADAS is the disease is a activity disease parameters for all juvenile idiopathic arthritis, and it's not specific of juvenile spondyloarthritis or hip arthritis. And we will see for other tools. So, sorry. So many physical functioning assessment tools are available for in pediatric rheumatology. The clinical monitoring of hip arthritis seems to be a difficult task. So the chronic and fluctuating nature of juvenile idiopathic arthritis differs within and between patients, that complicate the measurement of the disease outcome, and particularly the hip functional impairment. In children, their growing needs and expectation limits the use of age-specific questionnaire, and the use of proxy respondent further influence this evaluation. In fact, no specific tool for the assessment of functional impairment in hip arthritis in children is actually available. Many physical functional assessment tools in pediatric rheumatology are available, covering mainly physical functioning, also health status, also health-related quality of life, but none of them is specific of hip arthritis. Here we have the juvenile Arthritis Multidimensional Assessment Report, which is the JAMAR. And for the JAMAR, the first question, the first five questions assessing the functional ability may refer to the hip functional impairment. Also, the second and the third question for the assessment of quality of life should also refer to hip arthritis. In adult patients, we use frequently the Loken Algofunctional Index, the WOMAC Index, and the ECF, the International Classification Functional Disability and Health Index. But the most frequently used is the Loken Algofunctional Index. It's an assessment that includes pain and discomfort related to the hip arthritis, maximum distance walked, and also activity of daily living. But above of all, the major benefit or advantage of this index is that it allows to us to estimate the handicap degree. And as you see here, for low score under four, for example, we have a mild handicap, but for very high scores, more than 14, we have an extremely severe handicap, and this is frequently an indication for surgery, for hip surgery. For radiologic monitoring, Shalmerdin and all proposed recently a novel radiographic scoring system for growth abnormalities and the structural change in children with juvenile idiopathic arthritis of the hip. This score assesses the joint space measurement. We have here two zones, and then we measure the joint width superiorly and medially. It assesses also bone erosion, and we got here three stages of bone erosion from mild to severe. And it assesses also femoral head flattening and growth abnormalities, and we have here five stages from mild to very severe. But the major this score shows very moderate 2 week reproducibility, particularly the inter observer kappa index. Kappa is very low for this score, and future studies on clinical validity of such a score should focus on assessing only the reproducible radiographic variables. And an atlas for normal variation of acetabular and femoral head bone anatomy should be developed. So monitoring structural damage is necessary, but monitoring joint inflammation is crucial to adjust treatment. And as you know, hip is a deep joint inaccessible to clinical examination. So ultrasound is an excellent tool to meet this objective. And ultrasonography is a safe, painless, well-tolerated imaging tool with no radiation. It assesses inflammation, disease activity, and even structural damage such as bone erosion. It could be repeated frequently, so we can use it for monitoring treatment response, and it can be used also in therapeutic purpose for guiding injection. Nevertheless, the main disadvantage of ultrasound is the fact that its reliability depends on the quality of the equipment and the experience of the investigator, the physician. So here we will move to our last part of this lecture, which is the treatment. So we should expect from treatment of hip arthritis, mainly hip relief, pain hip relief, but also we need to prevent structural damage so we could preserve growth potential, ensure good school integration and later school socio-professional integration, and that could preserve the quality of life of these children. So among these treatments, which one could prevent, according to you, structural damage in patients with juvenile idiopathic arthritis? So please, Oscar, could you display the poll?
Yes.
Thank you, Oscar. Do you think that intra-articular corticosteroid could prevent structural damage, or TNF-alpha treatment, or conventional synthetics, disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, the CSD marts, or anti-IL-6, or none of all these propositions?
We have enough.
Yeah. So the majority the majority of you think that anti-TNF alpha treatment should prevent structural damage. About 56% think that intra-articular corticosteroids should prevent structural damage. Only 1/3 think that CSD marts and IL-6. So let's look for some evidence-based argument for that. And we will start with the intra-articular corticosteroid therapy. And here, Nadel and collaborators followed up prospectively 48 children treated by intra-articular triamcinolone exacetonide injection under ultrasound control in 67 arthritic hips. In 58% of joints, remission of the coxitis for a period of 2 years was obtained through a single administration of intra-articular triamcinolone, while another 12 hip joints showed remission of coxitis after repeated intra-articular injection, with a total remission rate of 76%. And as you see here in the table, the better responders were patients with posi-articular juvenile idiopathic arthritis and rheumatoid factor negative polyarthritis. And if we try to see the radiographic assessment, the structural response to intra-articular corticosteroid therapy. We have here others used the grading system of Sperling on pre-injection and post-injection, and globally 57 hip show no radiographic deterioration, while 10 hips show radiographic deterioration of 2 to 3 grade, which is relatively too much. And I remind you that 2 children exhibited 3 cases of femoral head necrosis in this study. Moreover, previous and many cases reported femoral head necrosis and structural damage after intra-articular injection. And this concern was confirmed by this very recent paper just published last week. And others confirmed the risk of osteochondral lesion associated to hip injection, intra-articular injection of corticosteroid. So the others underwent a retrospective data assessment and comparative analysis of skeletally immature juvenile idiopathic arthritis patients treated with intra-articular corticosteroids over 25 years. And they show that osteochondral lesion was associated with a hazard ratio of 8, which is too much, with intra-articular injection of corticosteroid. And here we have an excellent review of the literature made by our friend Chris Scott from South Africa, who performed a review of intra-articular corticosteroid therapy in juvenile idiopathic arthritis. So he found that the predictors of favorable response was first injection, oligoarthritis, shorter disease duration, younger age, male sex, injection on the knee and the extremity, upper extremity joints, higher ECR, current methotrexate therapy, but among predictors of poor response, we found here injection in the hip. And among main side effects of intra-articular therapy, corticosteroid therapy, we found here vascular necrosis of bone. So here we have a real concern of bone deterioration or a risk of a vascular necrosis of a bone related to intra-articular corticosteroid therapy. So for CSDMARDS, unfortunately, I didn't find any data. In our department, we give the children methotrexate when tolerated, and if we have no other therapeutic options such as biologic. But I'm curious to know about your experience. So please, if you could share your experience, what do you, how do you manage this patient in your department? Please share your thoughts via the chat, and we can discuss that later at the end of the lecture, if you want. And we'll move to biotherapy, and we will be start with TNF therapy. Efficacy and safety of TNF therapy antagonist in patients with juvenile idiopathic arthritis was confirmed by Sulpis and collaborators in this paper. So they performed a retrospective review of the medical chart of 20 patients with a mean age of 11 years at diagnosis. The median time from diagnosis to initiation of TNF antagonist therapy was 41 months, and the majority of patients used etanercept. So remission was achieved in 59% of cases after 3 months, and in 70% after 6 to 12 months. And as you see here, hip pain was relieved in the half of patients. What about the structural response to this treatment? We got here two case reports of patients with a severe rheumatoid factor positive juvenile idiopathic arthritis who showed improvement of joint space narrowing and subchondral erosion in hip joint when treated with etanercept in combination with methotrexate at least in 1 year. And as you see here in this serial radiographs, the improvement of the space joint width with this treatment. So there is also two Japanese cases, so were also published, but with different TNF inhibitors. So the mechanism of bone erosion and joint space narrowing repair are unclear. One study investigated whether bone erosion in rheumatoid arthritis patients shows evidence of repair in metacarpophalangeal joints when treated with TNF inhibitors and methotrexate. These results suggest that repair in rheumatoid arthritis emerge from bone marrow and endosteal lining rather than periosteal compartment. And in our department, we reported also a case of reparative change of hip joint after TNF inhibitors in ankylosing spondylitis. And as you see here, the improvement of joint width with 4 years of treatment with etanercept. We also participated to a retrospective multicentral cohort study that included two groups of patients with spondyloarthritis and hip involvement. The first group is treated with TNF-alpha inhibitors for at least 2 years, and the second group is TNF-alpha naive. The average duration of treatment and follow-up was 4 years for the first group and 4.8 years for the second group, and the structural damage was assessed by Basri HEAP. Basri HEAP is a structural damage score variating from 1 to 4, and 1 is the mild hip arthritis, the structural damage, and 4 is very severe hip damage, structural damage. And as you see here, the majority of patients treated with the TNF therapy got mild structural damage. And if you see here the radiographic features of hip arthritis, we see that the second group, the majority of patients of the second group, the group which didn't receive TNF therapy, express severe destructive arthritis. So the absence of hip structural damage was more frequent in group one, the group who was treated with TNF therapy, with an odds ratio of 4.7. So that, then patients treated by TNF therapy was protected from structural damage with an odds ratio of 4.7. And even after adjusting for confounding factors such as disease activity, BAS dye, the adjusted odds ratio is 3.3. For BAS-FI, the adjusted odds ratio is 3.1. And for CRP, the adjusted odds ratio was 4.2. And this data was confirmed also by other studies that confirm the stability of BAS3, and even in one study done by Hung and collaborator, we got here an improvement of width of hyaline cartilage. What about tocilizumab, which is an interleukin-6 inhibitor? Iniba and the collaborators assessed serial radiographs of hand and large weight-bearing joints before and after treatment with tocilizumab. Their study include 9 patients, and the mean follow-up was of 80 months. And we got here the clinical response to treatment after tocilizumab according to the different joints. And we got here a very good response in hip arthritis. We got here also in the second chart the radiographic examination, and we have here an improvement of the joint of bone porosis, of soft tissue swallowing, of joint space narrowing, of bone cysts, and erosion. And we have here an illustration of improvement of structural damage with tocilizumab. And then we can conclude that biologic therapy could lead to improvement of structural damage, or could stop at least structural idiopathic arthritis. And we will move to our latest last case report, a case that we will discuss today. It's of a patient with juvenile spondyloarthritis with axial and peripheral arthritis since the age of 13 years. The hip arthritis was inaugural, and unfortunately, because of some socioeconomic difficulties, the patient have a diagnosis delay of 5 years. Also, she didn't come regularly to our clinic to get correct for follow-up and treatment, and she automedicated with high doses of NSAIDs. At the age of 18, she got a peptic ulcer, and then only at the age of 20 years we have been able to introduce treatment with etanercept. And here you have the pelvis X-ray of this patient, and you have here a very severe stiffness of the right hip, and very limited also left hip. And if you see here, we have a very specific radiologic feature of hip arthritis in spondyloarthritis, which is synostosant arthritis with a complete ossification of the capsule, of the joint capsule. And you suspect that this joint is unable to move. They have 0 degrees of mobility, and we have very limited also left hip arthritis with a destructive arthritis. The Lucan index show a very high score of 15, confirming a very severe handicap. So according to you, could we propose total hip arthroplasty for this patient? Is it a good option? Could we propose, so please vote via the poll. Is it a good option for these patients? I remind you that she got only 20 years. She's aged of 20 years only. Is it a good option?
A few seconds. Good, I think we have enough responses.
Thank you. So the majority are favorable to total arthroplasty of the hip joint in this patient, and one third think that we will propose total arthroplasty, but several years later. So let's look for some evidence-based arguments favorable or against this option. So Agrawal and collaborators underwent a review of total hip arthroplasty in patients younger than the age of 13 years with a mid and long-term results. In a high volume arthroplasty unit, they performed a retrospective review over 20 years. Almost 100 patients were included. Their mean age was 25 and mostly female. And the total arthroplasty of the hip was indicated for development dysplasia of the hip in 29% of cases and for juvenile idiopathic arthritis in 25% of patients. So with a mean follow-up of 12 years, during which 25% of patients were revised. And the main indication for revision were aseptic loosening and linear wear. So this good results was confirmed also by this review of the literature and these other studies that shows an excellent survival of hip arthroplasty at 5 years and a very good survival rate at 10 years. So recently, robot-assisted total hip arthroplasty was tested by several surgery teams in developmental dysplasia of the hip and is considered as useful method to ensure adequate component positioning with an excellent outcome. And this new technique and this new performance should be tested in patients with juvenile idiopathic arthritis to improve the survival of arthroplasty. Our patient got total hip arthroplasty on the left side in 2011 and on the right side on 2012. And we have here a very good outcome. And I just saw her in my clinic last week and she's doing very well. So to conclude this lecture, evaluation and the management of hip arthritis require throughout history and throughout history and physical exam and an understanding of the pediatric skeleton. Common causes of hip pain in pediatric population should be ruled out, and early recognition of hip arthritis in the joint in the context of juvenile idiopathic arthritis is crucial for disease prognosis. The effect of the treatment on the hip arthritis and damage progression needs to be confirmed by randomized controlled trial or with real life registries data in order to establish consensual guidelines and recommendation for management of this affection. So as you see here, too much things should be done in the research in this field. And in our department, we work on the multicentral project of assessment of risk factors and prognosis factors of hip arthritis and juvenile idiopathic arthritis in collaboration with the GIR cohort, which is a multinational registry, including patients from Europe and also from Africa, from Morocco and Tunisia. My dream is an African study, and if you are interested, please don't hesitate to contact me via the PAFLAR website. And finally, for those who were wondering where is the hip hop thing that I promised, I will say that we should do our best to give hope for the hip and enable these children to dance, grow, and thrive. This very beautiful song comes from Cape Town, from South Africa, and gives hope, joy, love, and peace from Africa to the whole world. So thank you very much. If you have any question.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Professor Wafa Hamdi, for this excellent, extensive talk and very informative. We have input from colleagues. Professor Angela talked about the use of anti-TNF in hip arthritis. It seems they work, according to her, they work well, but the challenge being that some patients develop headaches and serious phobia on needles. So this may impair the compliance. And our friend named Amy Fox also commented on a good response using methotrexate, hydroxychloroquine, and xylazine in small joints arthritis. We have got a few questions, dear Wafa, if you don't mind. A colleague, Halima Benama, asked about what using the Kochar criteria for diagnosis of septic hip arthritis, the one that involves history, physical exam, and the basic labs like CBC and ESR. At the same time, Professor Lawrence, we have a pleasure to have you, Professor Lawrence, asked about what happened to the patient who developed a limb length discrepancy. How did you manage that patient? Thank you so much, Professor Wafa.
Thank you. I completely agree with Halima. In fact, in our department, mainly acute hip arthritis was managed by orthopedic surgeons, so we didn't see them very much. But we have to use these criteria to depict or to look for septic arthritis in order to realize an early diagnosis of septic arthritis and improve prognosis of this disease. For the patients that got very severe hip arthritis, she underwent total arthroplasty with a good outcome.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Professor Lawrence, for your comments.
Good. We have chopped up some of our time, and if you don't have, we can allow one more question if there is. As what you see displaying is video about our beautiful Tunisia. So the Mediterranean coast is here of Africa. If not, we thank you all for attending today, and we welcome much your contribution, especially in the feedback form. It will be delivered to our respective emails. This was a pleasure having Professor Wafa teaching us today the best way to save our children's hips so that they can keep making the similar moves that she has just shown us. Thank you all for joining. We welcome your contributions, especially the welcome, the feedback that you deliver through the feedback form that will be delivered to you soon. I can tell you surely that the recording of this session will be available on the PAFLA website very soon, which is www.pafla.org. We invite you to our next monthly CME, which will be in November, on the fourth day of November. It will be the first Wednesday of November, and we have our friends from East Africa teaching us more about pediatric rheumatology. Thank you all for your support give to improve pediatric rheumatology in Africa. We thank you for your time and contribution. Have a great day. Thank you so much, Professor Wafa, for today.
Thank you very much, Oscar, and thank you all for your patience and attending this lecture. Thank you very much. And see you soon in our next CME in November.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.